Sometimes to find the light, we must first touch the darkness. Welcome, everybody.
Why are you talking like that?
I don't know, man. Welcome to Podcast of the Rings. I'm Ben, that's Jessica. Anyways, the biggest takeaway, and I'm just going to jump to the ending of this podcast. Whoa, the biggest takeaway is that this guy should have been cast as Elrond. We said it in our watch along. I've only watched this series once. Even, and that's not a insult or detriment. Even like shows, I think I've rewatched Justified. I've rewatched The Wire. I've rewatched Fargo season 2.
Oh.
And like that's for live action. You know, I rewatch anime and, you know, Avatar and stuff like that, you know, just like because they're 20 minute episodes, but like hour long dramas, I don't rewatch a lot. And so me saying I've only watched this once, like it wasn't supposed to be like a dig or anything. But I had forgotten like the presence that, what's his name? What's Galadriel's brother's name?
I just looked it up. Will Fletcher.
Will Fletcher?
He's, you know, I have a problem. Great. I'm just realized in like my latter years that I am a little more dyslexic than I realized. And I Yeah. And so I play Minecraft and there's a Fletcher table for arrows and all those things for your villagers to work at. And I had been calling it Felcher for a very long time.
You guys, you know, the old Felcher table.
What? it really made people think something different. Oh, by the way, if you didn't get the memo, we are now just going to be explicit-ish. So
yes.
This whole podcast is now, I'm just not going to put myself through this editing of like taking care of the random F word. Am I going to just go full bore? No, but.
No, we're not going to like become Andrew Dice Clay does Lord of the Rings or something like that.
My dad loves Andrew Dice Clay. And I got to meet him actually after his show. And it was a fun show.
He's very good, but I remember like early in my streaming days. Talk about getting canceled. Because we would do Mondays where people would send in videos to watch and someone sent in like a set of his. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like I love explicit stuff. I love dark humor. But some of that stuff, I was like, I don't know if, one, my audience will like this. Two, I don't know if, like, I was like, oh, God. Like, because
I want to say we also did the same exact thing with Andrew Dice Clay, me and Scott, and it turned to Jew hating. And I'm here with Scott, and I'm like, oh, we're done now.
Yeah.
Like, and again, it is a character. It is a character. Not a great character. And he's able to quote unquote get away with it because of his finesse and his brutish choices. I'm not saying let's make that joke, but I'm just saying I thought
it's because the audience is growing along with you, and so it's like you're like, oh my gosh, he said the thing.
Yeah. We're definitely probably not doing a good job of picking apart shock humor like that, or at least I'm not.
No.
But You can understand how he gets from A to Z there, but on a clip on a stream is not going to go well.
No. Yeah.
I think we did the same exact thing.
Yeah. It's just like you have to know what you're in for and you have to like people.
And
know,
you don't have to like it. Like,
no,
you don't have to like it.
It's not for everybody, and that's okay.
You do have to know he doesn't believe these things that he's saying, and nor does the audience. The audience isn't going, yeah, MAGA, dude, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Andrew Dice Clay. It is a lot.
Love.
So Finrod is the.
Yeah, Finrod. Okay, it's Galadriel's brother.
Back to our actual show.
I know you like Richard Armadillo more than most people.
I know
his actual name.
I don't know why. I like him. You know what it is?
I think he's fine.
He brings the as charming as Father Christmas vibe to it, and that's literally how the first draft of Elrond was written, was as kind as Father Christmas, and then Tolkien realized Christmas ain't happened yet, so can't refer to him as that.
And then he became battle hardened and Hugo Weaving.
Well, and that was a choice, right? To like Which I thought was really a successful one. And we talked about it when we did the watch through. Having this stoic, scary man be soft and loving toward Aragorn and Arwen is beautiful. I think the choice in Arameo here is to show how adolescent and naive he is, you know? Like the kid who was abandoned by both of his fathers because of Silmarils. Like... both of his parents.
I think it's just like the presence of Fletcher that really works for me. Like when he comes on screen, when like we're gonna nitpick this episode. It's what we do. It's fun. I enjoy it. I did like this first episode. I was surprised because like I remember being kind of lukewarm on this show.
Okay, sure.
So I remembered what pulled me in. You know, I was gonna watch the full 10 episodes regardless. It's Middle Earth. I'm here for it.
Right.
But I do remember being like, you know what? I think we're back. I think we're here. And I was right. This is a great pilot episode to get you into what this show is supposed to be about. Now, do I think they got back to this point? That's a question to be answered for the coming weeks because we are going to watch every single episode. And if you guys want to join the Patreon, we are going to watch along every single episode with all of our patrons. So make sure you guys join the Patreon today and you get to watch along and hear our first reactions to each episode and complaining about how not hot enough everybody is.
Yes. It's worth the $2 a month alone just for that. So I'm with you that like, I'm not of the grouping that says this is just fan fiction. I feel like we're literally hearing we're in Middle Earth learning about things. There's some things that pull me out and right away when we watched it, like the elves just being dicks to Galadriel, just didn't work for me. It's supposed to be an allusion to the first major clash between elves over the Silmarils, where there was major deaths. It was like the first time they had experienced death, and they were, you know, it was a civil war essentially. Stop! These kids are dicks, you know? Yeah. It just bothered me.
It kind of reminded me of, I feel like they were trying to do what JJ did in 2009 Star Trek when like the Vulcan kids were bullying Spock.
Oh,
and
sure.
I think that really worked because, you know, they were still like emotionless. Like they was just like, oh, by the way, your mom's a human and you have a disadvantage. And then, you
didn't
know,
they
you
throw
see-
rocks at him? Why do I remember rocks being thrown at him?
Don't they throw rocks at Galadriel's boat?
I'm conflating the two.
Yeah. But I think that really worked, but this one didn't.
Because we just don't know elves to be spiteful and mean for no reason.
That's the thing, is that when we go from seeing nothing but these angelic Lee Pace, Cate Blanchett, Hugo Weaving, Liv Tyler, Evangeline Lilly, like angelic, like perfect beings,
right,
that don't really get like emotional, like Evangeline Lilly cries, but that's about it. But other than that, like we don't really see them get angry or, you know, like bitchy or anything like that. And then the first thing we get is like little kids being little kids. It's like, oh, these aren't my elves. Like I don't want to be that guy, but it's like, oh, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Because I think the other thing that so what's interesting about this, watching this over a year later after having already watched all this and now in anticipation of season two, is some like cultural hindsight and some cultural information has also like seeped into my rewatch of this. A lot of people didn't take the breath to realize that we're looking at like Elrond and Galadriel, especially in this episode, at their adolescence of elfhood here.
Yeah.
Like, we're watching Galadriel for 10 episodes rage through the loss of her brother and trying to find Sauron. And it clouds her ability to be Cate Blanchett Galadriel. And we're watching Armadillo, you know, be just like a guy who just lost his dad and, like, doesn't realize what his impact, like fast forwarding to Durin. He doesn't realize that being gone for 20-something years in Durin's life makes a huge impact.
Yeah.
That's something that you know, our Elrond from the movies understands that his absence and he makes a difference in people's lives. So, because if we didn't start with them at adolescence, okay, maybe the opening scene is better. Now that I'm saying this, because we're seeing adolescent elves that are just trying to figure out their place in the world.
I don't want adolescent elves to be adolescent humans. Like, they are supposed to be, like, superior beings. Like, they are supposed to be better than people. Like, that's just...
Totally.
It's just, like, a literal... It's hard to say, like, a fact when you're talking about fantasy, but as it is written, as Stilgar would say... Like,
as it is written.
I know you're not as chronically online as...
The Lisan al-Ghaib would not... No, but, like... Would not lie.
When... Right after, like, when Timothy and Austin are fighting and he deals, like, his death blow and, like, you know, he's like, oh, you fought good Atreides, and he falls over and you see Stilgar just go, Lisan al-Ghaib, like, really fast. Like, anytime someone does anything good in, like, anything now, they just attach that gif of, like, Lisan al-Ghaib.
That's good. That's very good.
It's like, that's what the internet is for. Not dumb, toxic, stupid stuff. It's to put Javier Bardem's perfect reaction of, like, because he's, like, the first one to react to anything. Like, there's no gasp or anything. He's just like, Lisan al-Ghaib.
Our friend from streaming, Kale, sent me a gif of, before I had seen the movie, of any time Timothy, basically, or Paul Atreides does anything, and basically this is supposed to capture Stilgar's essence, it's just donuts being creamed on.
Oh, it's called glazing.
Glazed! They've been glazed!
That's the new term.
Okay, gotcha. I didn't understand what that meme was until after I had seen the movie, because yes. it's so different in the books, but it totally works. You're right though. The internet is made for like YTMND. Only give me YTMND and nothing else, and our podcast. So
yes, and our podcast.
But I guess that's just whether we want that or not in our elves. It's what we are getting out of this series. Elves maybe not making the best decisions or, you know, being blinded, having blind spots. Let's put it that way. Some blind spots.
And that, I think, is the biggest hill to overcome, is that we have only seen our two main characters be perfect. Have foresight, make all the right decisions. You know, even Elrond, you know, begrudgingly didn't want to give up Arwen, you know, didn't believe.
That's also a book. That's also a movie, Elrond. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, didn't believe in men and stuff like that. But, like, they come around, they learn. And I guess, like, that makes a little growth for them. But especially Cate Blanchett, who's just, like, infallible. Like, literally infallible, untouchable, like, can do no wrong, is literally an angel sent from heaven. That is how she is portrayed in all six movies.
Granted, she is tempted. We see her, you know, turn ghost green, and she overcomes it. But that is a moment of temptation that then harkens to what we see later in this series a little bit. You know, we may be mature versions of ourselves that can still get triggered. And I think if you take this as her origin story, you can see why she may want the ring, the one ring.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like...
You can't say ring. Can't say ring well.
Fuck, I failed already.
She may want some circular object, not a bracelet, not a necklace, something smaller. Go on your hand.
Mm. But I don't know what part of your hand.
I don't know either. If only there's such a word for a piece of jewelry like this.
I'm going to just go from left to right here. So look, pull up a picture of Robert Arameo.
Okay. Sorry. Me saying armadillo once is really thrown off.
I think also I'm showing early signs of Alzheimer's or dementia, so it's fine. And now look up a picture of Celebrimbor from the show.
Celebrimbor,
the great forgist. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Do they not look like father and son?
They do.
Like, okay, I couldn't get Alex to admit to this.
They definitely got a look for their elves in this movie, in this show. I don't
they look
think
like
the,
each other, don't they?
I don't think it's the right look, but
no,
that's just
I
me.
Feel you. I can actually, I could sooner recast Elrond and keep Celebrimbor though. Like Celebrimbor nailed it. I kind of loved it. It worked for me. Here's why.
I'm not
though,
saying
too.
Anything about their acting. I think they're all fine actors.
No
I
one's just, saying anything about their acting.
But it's just like. I don't want to see old immortal beings. I don't think that makes sense to me. Like, when you say immortal, I guess you don't have to mean ageless, but elves, it is ageless.
Yeah. So this is another criticism we had was Gil-galad. The actor himself, while doing his darndest, doesn't look like an elf. He looks like a Numenorean.
He's so perfect as a Numenorean. That's the
thing. He would
thing,
have
is
killed
that, like,
as Elendil.
He would have slain as Elendil. Would have been even, you know, the big bearded guy. I can't remember his name. Who's gonna like be the little finger of this series? It seems like, you know, sowing political dissent back in Numenor while the queen is gone.
Oh, that guy. Sure. Yes.
Yeah. But he does not look like an elf, like at all to me. And so, and especially cause like that guy, I immediately caught him as, you know, he plays Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, which incredibly fun movie, right? Couldn't be more. Yes, sir. Eagle screech. Like, put him on a horse.
Sam Eagleston from the Muppets.
He literally is. It is the American way. It is the British way. Like,
yeah.
Give me all of that for Elendil, but when he showed up on screen, I was like, oh, this is not the most powerful elf lord I've ever seen. This is like my drill sergeant from, you know, what's a
Scared
full metal,
straight
Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, sure.
Like that. Jesus. He's that guy. And so it's just some of the casting does take me out of it a little bit. But I think all the acting's good. And the roots of what this show was going to be is there. Now, could this show have been 6 episodes, 7 episodes? And like, we tighten this up. We just like tighten it up. Absolutely. I still, like, as we go along, maybe my feelings will change. But I remember we did some. Literally, next episode, Gladys on a boat for the whole thing. I think for the first 3 episodes, she doesn't make land.
Yeah. The length of time it takes to get to Numenor is kind of crazy. But now that we know who. What's Charlie Vickers? What do they call him? What's his name? Sauron's.
I know what you're talking about. I
what do they call him? Anyway, like, I'm anxious to get to that scene now and that episode to, like, how much do they betray that he's Sauron?
Yeah.
Because so many people didn't want to even accept that that could have been Sauron. But even looking at Finrod's sentence that we opened the podcast with to. Something of the light, you have to touch the darkness. She has to get to know Sauron to know who she's actually fighting, you know? So it's like, they're literally telling us right at the top, I feel like the secrets of this TV show was doing a lot of heavy lifting for people to be interested in it. Like, who is the stranger?
And they did. And like, I mean, they spent God knows how much money on this thing to get the rights and to then to produce it and then to make it and shoot on location for a lot of stuff, which I will say there's some great field shots. I love a good field. I love a good meadow. I love a good hillside. And you know, I lose
those shots if you cut up time though, dude.
And that's the thing is that, like, Disney's such an easy target now with, you know, everything with kind of like Star Wars isn't doing too great. You know, the MCU isn't doing too great, but just like for me, you know, I remember maybe it was the second season of Mandalorian. And it was directed by Robert Rodriguez. It was like when Boba Fett first kind of like comes back. And it was so jarring because it looked like the hills of Burbank. It literally looked like he took a camera. And like that's Robert Rodriguez style. He's always been like, you know, real street level, cheap and stuff like cheap is a bad word, but just like very budgeted, but it's worked for his career and he's had an amazing career and he makes great stuff. But when you go from The Volume, which is everything they filmed on for literally everything, and then you go outside and you're like, whoa, that's what real life looks like. It was incredibly jarring. And I thought it was a fine episode, but it was like, I remember talking about it. And I was like, yeah, did this episode look cheap to anybody else? And my friend was like, I think it's just because they were outside. I was like, that's a good point. Like, and that's as simple as it is. It's like, if you don't have the right, you know, cinematographer or cameras or lighting and stuff like that, that's where the effort comes in, where there's not that there's not effort on The Volume. Of course there is. Amazing artists doing amazing things, but everything is composited. Be like, oh, I want this to be 5:36 p.m., sundown, it's a little bit cloudy, and there's like a light mist going. Okay, right. Press button XQYZW. Okay, there it is. And you don't have to wait for those things, you know.
Right.
Like I was, you know, watching Dune, and it was just like, oh, that shot where, you know, Chani and Paul are watching the bombardment, and it's like, oh, they had to wait for that perfect sunset to get this moment. And it's like, they better film it, because you got about 10 minutes to get this thing right before it moves on.
I genuinely think about that all the time when you're dealing with golden hour shots like that.
Yeah.
Because how do you get coverage on something like that? How do
it's
you make
crazy.
Sure? It's crazy. Those are always actually, I guess it could be perceived as taking me out of the film. However, I am appreciating that skill that it took to get them on that dune at the same time,
right,
so that you're getting that shot, you know. So yeah, I don't know. Speaking of like sunset or whatever, I was thinking about it today, how frigging cringy it is when the elves start singing because Galadriel's going back to Valinor. And I realize it's kind of supposed to be cringy because she senses that she's not supposed to be going there.
Yeah. It kind of like almost wakes her up like it wakes us up.
It's like, why are these guys just singing out of nowhere? And then I had a feeling, and tell me if you had this feeling too, if she were to go into Valinor and didn't jump off the boat, I felt like she would have burned up.
No.
Like, because they did this whole thing with her that she wasn't allowed to go back home until she was granted the passage, right?
Yes.
And you were so right. And then they kind of do talk about this. Elrond knew when they were talking, you know, they have this lovely meeting. My friend. Elrond knew he was sending her back home.
Yeah. Like, he kind of set her up a little bit to be like, to get taken out of the picture. It was like, you know, I just listened to a podcast about Goodfellas. Like, she was Joe Pesci, like, oh, you're going to be a made man. And then you walk into an empty house and get gunned in the back of the head.
Wow. Like,
it literally felt like that. You're just like, okay, we're going to put you over here, put you back on the shelf, Galadriel. And
this show's too woke. Forget it.
Too woke. Oh, my God. You're too woke. It was like, you know, okay, I'll use this example. It's like Woody in Toy Story 2 being sold off to, you know, to China to be put on a shelf forever. It's like, oh, you're not going to be a plaything anymore. You're going up on the mantle where you belong, where everyone can admire you and talk about you and take pictures of you.
Oh, no.
Like, literally, she was going to be a little statuesque. She wanted to be a little tree. Elrond was like, look at all these tree statues around. That's going to be you. But
oh,
you get to live.
I didn't even think about that. That, like, you're looking at these people with legends.
Yeah.
And he's saying, you still have this legend.
Yeah.
Whoa. But you're done now.
Is
wild.
Because, like, I believe all the people that are in the tree statues have, like, died in battle. You know, fighting Sauron or Morgoth. Do they ever mention Morgoth? I don't think they do, right?
She says Morgoth. I feel like I've heard her say Morgoth at like the top.
Are you the kind of person that just like has to say words in like accents? Yeah, I think we're gonna go get some spaghetti real quick. Over
Have you seen that meme of that girl going "Cacio e Pepe"?
Cacio e Pepe.
And then
say that I was walking my friend's dog yesterday, and I was looking for a place to get lunch, and like we walked by an Italian place. It's like, oh, let me look at the menu, see if they have chicken parm. And then the first thing that pops up, and I was like, oh, they have Cacio Pepe. I said it out loud. It's like the so one thing just, you have to say in that accent.
You had to say it that way. No, so I didn't know that this is what I did until I heard Kristen Bell talking about it on her husband's podcast, because he was making fun of her for it. She's a mimic. She'll hear people say something, and she immediately like parrots it, because it's interesting to her how it's said. And so, like, I'll try to get the pitch exactly right. Morgoth, you know. So rather than saying, I could say Morgoth, I don't care. But I'm more titillated by how she says it.
Oh, no, for sure. Because, like, you know, a Balrog of, like, when, especially when you watch the extended versions and Legolas goes, it was a Balrog of Morgoth. I'm like, okay there, 22-year-old Orlando Bloom.
Royal Academy of the Dramatic Arts.
Right, I know you're just... mewing and, you know, like look maxing, as the kids call it nowadays, for you
look
know
maxing
looks maxing, which yeah, it's like just new terms for the same
thing.
No,
good thing. For them.
Yeah,
good. They just need to differentiate themselves. Good for them.
There's an entire TikTok account, and I wish I knew the name of it, because like I don't follow it, but it comes up, and it's this guy who does these illustrations, and it's just pencil sketches, but it's all about mewing, you know, like the zoo, like for people that aren't watching, it's called mewing now. And
it's when you look at something, you're like,
yeah, it's Blue Steel from Zoolander, if that helps anybody that's just listening. And he's made one of Monsters, Inc., but it's called Mogsters, Inc., because mogging is when you get mewed by a different guy, like when you get quote unquote mogged. I learned so many terms from TikTok, and I sound so old right now, and I'm okay with it because I am old.
That's great. My brain is blowing up.
And so it's just like the end, and it's just like I have to lock in, and then it's just like Sully from Monsters, Inc. with like this crazy jawline and everything. The next time I find one, I'll send you the account, and you just have to scroll for like 5 minutes, because it's the most ridiculous thing ever, and it's the same thing all the time where it's just like, oh, I'm getting, you know. And they even did it with Boo, the little kid. It's like, Boo, you have to lock in. And then it's just like, well, flip the page. And it's like, Boo, the little girl from Monsters, Inc., like with a Christian Bale American Psycho chin. And it's so funny.
I love people who know how to translate, like,
and it,
culture.
Like, he's a really good artist. Whoever's doing this, he, she, I really don't know. They're really good artists, because, like, it looks great. So it's
that's
like, this
fantastic.
Person has a genuine skill. And it's
that's
just
amazing.
Like, they did it for the goofiest thing, but it's so great. I love
that's
the internet
so
sometimes.
So great. All right. You've changed my whole position on mewing and getting mugged.
Oh, it's so good.
Jeez. So what else do we see? We see the you said it as we were watching it on the Twitch channel, that the most boringest thing is the Harfoot situation.
Out of the three main storylines of Galadriel, Harfoot,
of this first episode.
Yeah. Cuz like I feel like I know like we separate and stuff like that, but it's Harfoot, the Southland, and Galadriel. It's like our three kind
of. Oh yeah,
of big.
We get the MILF and the sexiest only.
I will say they put the two hottest people together. Like they.
Yeah, Arondir is next level. He's next level. Yeah, it's interesting. The nitpicking that you and I majority did during the stream while we were watching it is the overall looks of the characters.
And it's such a simple thing that we didn't really realize. I mean, like, you know, I was 14 to 16 watching the original trilogy, and so like everything, and it was so funny because I had only seen, you know, the Rankin-Bass Hobbit, and so like elves are very weirdly portrayed in that movie, like where they're like,
oh my god,
yeah, so like when they showed up all gorgeous and beautiful, I was like, oh okay, but I never really like, oh, these aren't my elves, like they, but Peter Jackson just it is the burden of being perfect, like
it's the litmus test for it all.
Like, he set the bar so, and I will say, impossibly high. You can't be, this is a tough job to do for Morfydd Clark of being Galadriel, and I think she does it well. Yeah. And I think Richard Arameo does a good job as well. Is it Robert or Richard? Yeah.
I think it's Robert.
I really destroyed her with an armadillo. Just one word.
I don't even know what my name is right now.
Right. But just them casting Arandir just so picture perfect, to where he is just mewing the whole time, and the few lines he has, like, Jess is a little harsher on his acting than I am. I think he's fine. I think
his act. Let's put it this way. Let me just glaze this. He doesn't need to be that good of an actor.
You can't just throw in terms. I feel like Jess, like, just turned her chair backwards to the kids. I was like, all right, kids, let me glaze this for you real quick.
I understood that reference.
Let's rap for a second.
He doesn't need to be that good of an actor. No. That's how beautiful he is.
No,
he also has the best torso and, like, the best form I've ever seen with an arrow. And I'm getting ahead of myself here.
No, but you're right.
Too pretty, man.
And that's, you know, we talked about, like, his like, watch partner that, like, when he comes on screen, I was like, this, no. And it's just, like, the unfortunateness of, like, one, they needed to give him, we said, like, and this is...
His outfit.
His outfit was not great. The costume department did him no favors, where, like, this man is not unattractive in any kind of way.
I actually love that actor. I genuinely do. Yeah.
But when you're standing next to Arandir and, like, you have short sleeves on and your arms aren't that defined... And, like, they don't give you, like, a gauntlet or anything, like, on your forearm or upper arm. Like, you just have, like, a short sleeve with, like, nothing on there. Like, it doesn't look great. And, you know.
You know what? There's two sides to this conversation that I just feel like it needs to be pushed, like, put out there. I would love to be that guy that got the job and someone didn't say lose 20 pounds or.
Oh, for
let's
sure.
You know, I think there's something kind of cool about the fact that everyone was. Probably accept it as is a little bit, you know, like, but at the same time, I can see why those details are so sort of pull you out of it a little bit, because that guy doesn't look like an elf, you know.
And then say, I don't need anyone to, like, you know, start popping steroids or something like that. But if you told me, hey, Ben, we're filming season 3 for Rings of Power, we want you to be a Numenorean, an elf, like, I'd be healthy about it, but your boy wouldn't touch a carb for, like, the next.
Sure.
Like, especially, it's one thing, you know, like, there was literally, like, Jason Momoa and Chris Hemsworth, like, two of the biggest specimens on this earth were going back and forth because, and I always said that because, like, Chris Hemsworth has a tough job because Thor is always sleeveless. Like, like, Robert Downey Jr.'s got, like, the camera in his face and is just doing, you know, like, a face shot, you know, for his whole thing.
Wow.
Chris Evans has his full bodysuit on. So, yeah, he might have, you know, the shirtless scene in the first Captain America. You know, he's got the pulling the helicopter.
He was probably ripped the whole time, though.
He was for sure in shape, but it's another thing to be sleeveless your entire shoot, to where you are a literal Norse god. Your arms have to be rippling and jacked and veiny the whole time. So
Sure.
And so,
sure.
Like, that is tough. For sure. I'm not asking anybody to do that. But I'm just saying, like, if you don't, you know, work out or something, the costume department needs to help you out. Like,
I think there's ways to make it look like he's an elf with these elongated limbs and stuff like that. I wouldn't,
like,
trade
Orlando
that
Bloom
actor.
Didn't work out at all. Like, it
he
seemed
was a
like
lied little bitch.
Yeah, he was a little waif, and it worked. But, like, the way he was costumed, you know, he was fully sleeved, everything. He looked good pulling that bow. Like, you believed he could climb an Oliphant and take it down. Like, no one, it might have looked ridiculous, but it was just like, oh, yeah. By the third movie, you're like, oh, for sure he's, like, laddering up arrows and taking dudes one on, like, 1v5. And then, like, when he pulls back 3 arrows. Have you ever shot a bow before?
I have not, actually, although my friend Scott's youngest is becoming, not youngest, oldest, is becoming an archery master.
I was like, youngest?
Master.
Oh my God, take that away.
No. Oh no, I would
Scott,
not trust
I'm not
the
questioning
youngest.
Your parenthood, but good Lord.
Good Lord. No, the youngest can't be trusted even if he is 10 years old with arrows. No, the oldest just got his yellow belt.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
But, like, my roommate has a compound bow, and I know that's, like, different than a long bow, like, before all the archer people come in our comments. But,
yeah,
like,
our entire audience.
It is. But even, like, I went to the Renaissance Fair. That's tough. Like, it is tough, for sure. And so, like, you, there is, like, an
under... We take that for granted.
We do.
You know what I mean? Because we see it so often that we're like, well, of course Katniss can just shoot a bow.
Yeah, like,
you know,
we see,
I mean?
You know, them just, like, you know, like, machine gunning arrows off, so we don't realize, like, the arm strength it takes. And that's another thing, is that we have Katniss, and again, they put her in, like, you know, a full body suit and made her, you know, kind of black widowed out and look really good. And then we've got Jeremy Renner, and he was sleeveless with his big old biceps, killing it in the Avengers. So we have all these subconscious things of how people, quote unquote, should look. And so it that's the thing, is that we're not, I don't even think it's like judging as like, he should be buffer. It's just like a thing you automatically think of, like, oh, costume doesn't look right or something. Like, it's just like something subconscious that you automatically go to.
I think in general, the majority of what they did with the costumes were a failure.
Yes.
Because, like, a lot of people, especially while we were watching it in my chat, was talking about, like, where did the money go? Where did the billion of dollars go? And granted, let's just put this to bed now. 800,000 million, you know, 800 million went to securing the rights. You know what I mean? That's not necessarily accurate, but a lot of it went to securing the rights. And yes, did you get them forging chainmail link by link for this one? But, like, some of it, either they were trying too hard or didn't put enough attention to detail on, like, let's say the elves garb when they were sailing to Valinor. That was weird looking.
Yeah, I was talking about it, to where it's the perfect juxtaposition where Arondir looks great. You know, he walks into that Southland pub or whatever it is.
Oh,
and
totally.
I was like, oh, this is right. This is, like, perfect casting. You know, we were talking about all the prancing pony, you know, old, drunk, New Zealand, British guy. Yeah, like, all those guys. Like, how do you even cast those guys? Are they even actors? Or did you just pick them up at a soccer pub or something like that? They look so good. And that's what that Southland pub looks like. But then you have Arondir come in, and he's gorgeous, but his armor looks like a cosplayer's armor.
It does. Like, the idea of that armor is beautiful. Genuinely, I think the idea of it is beautiful.
Yeah.
But it looks like it just got put on him.
Yes.
Like a plate.
Like, it doesn't look worn in. It looks brand new. It looks like the first time, like, I wore shoulder pads for, like, peewee football. It was like, oh.
Granted, he's not seeing a lot of action in battle. That's also something.
But
too.
He's also, like, been there for 100 years. If you're right. No matter what, if I wear the same pair of jeans to my office job for 100 years, they're gonna get washed. They're gonna get worn in.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. He has holes in his. Yeah. You know, totally.
I got blisters on me fingers.
I got blisters on me fingers. So what I'm taking away from this so far is that we're very superficial people.
Very, very. And it's, but that's the thing. When you buy the rights to this property,
right,
and the history that it has, that's the thing, is that, you know, we just talked about Dune. Dune has a very big history. People love it. People love the books. There's big Lynch movie defenders. There's big, you know, sci-fi series defenders, for sure. But overall, Denis had kind of had carte blanche to make things look the way he wanted to look.
Sure.
Like,
I didn't talk about this when we did the episode, because it was an issue I've had since the first movie. I take a lot of umbrage with the fact that the still suits don't cover their whole friggin' face, because if they were really worried about moisture, you're losing heat at the top of your head. You know what I mean? Like, you're supposed to cover your whole body. But I can understand.
For sure,
that's
a movie thing. Yeah.
It's a movie thing. But
it's like the same thing, like, anytime, you know, any movie that's not The Thing, where they're, like, in crazy snow, no one ever has a beanie. No one ever has earmuffs or goggles or anything.
Sure. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it... The Thing get it, like, they're, like, they're totally bundled up, aren't they?
They are like, and that's the point, is that you can't tell who's who because everyone's in a giant fur coat and goggles and masks.
Wow. Hi, Penguin. So, I guess, does this all pull you out to the point of, like, not enjoying it? Or is it just, like, are you 75% bought in? Or, like, what, because here's the thing. To me, it betrays just, like, one weird level of detail. It's not surprising that this is these guys' first job show running.
Yes. And that's the thing, is it's For this episode, I really do like the story points. I really do like...
Is she in your lap?
Yeah, and she does, like, the little head push berry thing.
So sweet.
I do like the story points, we talked about Arondir and Bronwyn. I like their will they, won't they this whole time.
Sure,
even though there's sexy. There's a lot more will they than I remember. Like, they're, like, holding hands in this first episode and just, like... For me, it's not even like a will they, won't they. It's just like, when will
when
they?
When they? Oh, but they finally, it's pretty good. They really.
It's pretty great. They earn it. And so I like that. I like, the people of the Southland being very resentful towards the elves of being like, that was our ancestors. This is not us. We are not evil. Like, we didn't want Sauron. We don't like Sauron. Stop, kind of babysitting us, basically. And I like that aspect too. The Harfoots, I like the two actors. The first thing we brought up was that, and I fully believe that the Frodo Harfoot is gonna have her Sam Harfoot because she needs her. They have great chemistry. I'm sad that we never see the elf people again.
Honestly, it is a mistake not to get. It's such a clever idea. So,
right.
It's such a clever idea. I genuinely think all the actors are well cast in the Harfoot world. Although, yes. What's so funny is those elk people are like, they'll see ya, it's over. Like, they're basically like, they're ruthless, And like, they're the nicest, ruthless people
they are
you've
ruthless,
ever met.
I will say. They are ruthless.
Like, oh, you broke your leg. Peace out.
See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. Like,
it's wild. It's wild. I'm just saying that they're all well cast. I don't know how much we needed of them. We just didn't. But you know what I mean? Like,
and that's what I'm talking about. There's 10 episodes. This could have been 7. And it would have made, we end the episode, with the stranger landing with the comet. That would have been, there's too many who is this person mysteries.
Yeah.
Like, 2 out of 3 stories has a who is this person mystery.
Yeah.
It's a bit too much.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, we're wondering who Sauron is, and is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Oh, I just want to be a blacksmith in Numenor. Oh, I didn't mean to abandon all the other people on the ship that got sea monstered.
I guess if you didn't have... Oh, and I have so many things to talk about when we get to that episode with regards to that. I guess if you don't have the stranger landing among the Harfoots, though, you just know that Charlie Vickers is Sauron. Do you know what I mean? Which, again, like, I guess it's kind of fun that they built in this meta intrigue. Like, who is this guy? But if you just have Charlie Vickers talking to Galadriel for 7 episodes even, it's undeniable who you're dealing with.
Yeah.
So I can see why they integrated both.
But I never thought that the stranger was Sauron. I thought he's either Saruman or Gandalf. Like, I don't know. For me, I'd never imagined Sauron as like a bearded, wizened old man.
Oh, I never thought he was for a second, but I guess I'm just trying to recall why I wasn't sold on who Charlie Vickers was.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Halbrand. I wasn't.
Oh, good pull.
Yeah, I would tell Alex, like, oh, look, he's looking at the forge, this Sauron, and Alex was certain that it wasn't. So I can't remember who else we thought he was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it'll be good to rewatch it and see if I can, like, pick up on that thread of thinking again. My question now is, does a show have to have, meta intrigue in order for it to be good, or could they have just told us the story? And let us know that it was Sauron.
I think they needed a little bit of it because we know so much. Like, with the whole, even with this episode ending with Galadriel jumping off the ship, it's like, yeah, we know that happened. We don't know that that happens, but we know that Galadriel doesn't go off to the Undying Land.
Right,
so
right.
We know that she's not going to go. And so when you have, when you do prequel stuff where you have established characters that are in later things, we're not worried about Elrond mortally. We're not worried about Galadriel mortally. Like, we don't think they're going to die.
Right.
So you need to create some kind of intrigue of like, okay, how did this person get from A to Z? Because sure. we know they're at Z, we just don't know how they got there.
So interesting that you say that, because Alex and I were going to watch Dune over the weekend, Dune 1, because I haven't watched it since I first watched it. And then HBO Max sold us on Wonka, and I'm like, you know what? Let's go. Let's watch Wonka. And the entire time, I'm like, this movie never needed to be made. What the story they're telling right now is not the story I want for Wonka. Now, it was enjoyable, and there were some amazing comedic heavy hitters that made the – it's not a regrettable watch whatsoever. But when I was thinking about it after the fact, I was like, I want to see what made Wonka a shut-in. Why was Wonka bereft of family and friends? Yeah. I'm seeing a really nice Wonka here who's only trying to help people and get rid of the bad guys. Wonka's kind of the bad guy at the beginning of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, that's kind of the point, isn't it?
So, like, I want to see what made him a nice dude to a recluse, you know? So that's all. So you're totally right that, like, getting us from A to Z, what happens in between, it is fascinating. I think once the entire series is all done, we will know what their vision is. And I just hope that they don't try to please all the, like, crappy boys that complained like they did, like J.J. Abrams did with Star Wars, you know?
I hope so, too. And that's the thing about, you know, taking studio notes. And, you know, we just – it's so funny because, like, the same people that will hate – what are they called? Test screenings for movies that they – or they'll take them as gospel. Like, oh, my gosh, see, test screen, they love Joker 2. Oh, my God, Joker 2, it's violent, it's gorgeous, it's everything. But then, like, when it's bad, they're like, oh, they're just test screenings. They're just stupid people. It's like, okay, so which one is it? Do you believe test screenings or do you not? And that it's the same thing with, you know, Star Wars. They're like, oh, they should have had a plan. They should have gone with a plan. Oh, they should have listened to the fans. It's like, okay, well, which one is it?
Totally. Totally. And Penguin has an opinion, too. Anyway, anything last you want to say about this episode as we go into the next episode?
I thought it was a good, really good pilot. I like Morfydd Clark quite a bit. Elrond kind of set her up for failure, and I wish, like, this thing is, I wish
there's some betrayal there. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and so, I don't know. I like this overall episode. I know we kind of nitpicked it to death, but I really did like it. I thought it was a good opening episode. I thought for people that aren't familiar, like we are with maybe even with just the Peter Jackson stuff, I think it's a good opening for people to get people hooked.
Yeah, and I do think it made me feel like the movie and this live in the same world effectively. It really does make me feel like that. Yeah. There's several different ways you guys can get in contact with us. You can go to Podcast the Rings on Instagram, Pod of the Rings on X, and something else. Potter Pod on God, jeez. Killing it with the branding. You can
killing
find
it.
Us. Shout out to Arsenal Roy 2K, who is the holder of the 10 mortal ring, 9 mortal rings of men. Join us on Patreon so you can do the watch along with us as we go through every episode. Maybe you can make us feel differently about these. Patreon.com/ podcast of the rings. And that's a penguin over there.
That's a penguin. You can see the penguin.
And join us. Let us know what your thoughts are. Let us know if you think we're too superficial. Yell at us. And anything else you want to tell our friends?
May our paths meet again.